The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter Number 5, Text Number 4, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on March 21st, 2015, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ekada Asurarat Putram Ankam Aropya Pandava Praprachcha Katyatam Vatsa Manyate Sadhu Yat Bhavan Ekadasurarat Putram Ankam Aropya Pandava Prapachcha Katyatam Vatsa Manyate Sadhu Yad Bhavan Ekadasurarat Putram Ankam Aropya Pandava Prapachcha Katyatam Vatsa Manyate Sadhu Yad Bhavan Ekada.
Once upon a time,
Asurarat,
the emperor of the Asuras,
Putram,
his son,
Ankam,
on the lap,
Aropya,
placing,
Pandava,
O Maharaj Yudhisthira,
Prapracha,
inquired,
Katyatam,
let it be told,
Vatsa,
my dear son,
Manyate,
considers,
Sadhu,
the best,
yet,
that which,
Bhavan,
your good self. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Yudhisthira, once upon a time, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, took his son Prahlad on his lap and very affectionately inquired, my dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all the subjects you have studied from your teachers. Purport. Hiranyakashipu did not ask his young son anything that would be very difficult for him to answer. Instead, he gave the boy a chance to speak plainly about whatever he thought might be the best. Prahlad Maharaj, of course, being a perfect devotee, knew everything and could say what the best part of life is. In the Vedas, it is said, Yasmin vigate sarvamevam vigatam bhavati. If one properly understands God, he can understand any subject matter very nicely. Sometimes we have to challenge big scientists and philosophers, but by the grace of Krishna, we emerge successful. It is impossible, practically speaking, for ordinary men to challenge scientists or philosophers concerning genuine knowledge. But a devotee can challenge them because the best of everything is known to a devotee by the grace of Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.11. Tesham evandukam paratam aham agyanadam tamaha Nashayami atma bhavasto gyanadipena bhasvata. Krishna, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart as the super soul, dissipates all the ignorance from the heart of a devotee. As a special favor, he enlightens the devotee with all knowledge by putting before him the torch of light. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, knew the best of knowledge. When his father inquired from him, Prahlad gave him that knowledge. Prahlad Maharaj was able to solve the most difficult parts of problems because of his advanced Krishna consciousness. And therefore, he replies as follows, which will be tomorrow morning's Bhagavatam class. Everyone has to come tomorrow now to see what Prahlad is going to say. We're not going to give you a sneak preview. You have to show up tomorrow. Prabhupada addresses this whole point here, and he emphasizes the point, a very wonderful point. When you know Krishna, you know everything. You don't need a PhD. All you have to do is know Krishna, then you become the most learned PhD in the whole universe. Prabhupada one time said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. Actually, Bhagavad Gita, what is it? Raja Vidya, it is the king of knowledge. Just like yesterday I spoke with one a reporter from a Christian magazine. We had an interview. And he was bringing so many points of Christianity, and I could easily just defeat everything. Easily. Because this knowledge is perfect. We can talk with a scientist, we can talk with a theologian, we can talk with a politician, any type of subject matter. You see, everything is actually related with Krishna. There's nothing disassociated from Krishna. Just like this big so-called scientist, Dr. Stephen Hawking. He says, I have a copy of it in my computer, a video where he's saying, everything comes out of absolutely nothing. He directly says that. Everything comes out of absolutely nothing. And then they think, oh, Dr. Stephen Hawking, he's so realized, he's so advanced, he knows now everything comes out of nothing. Big applause, you know. Thank you, Dr. Stephen Hawking, for enlightening us. Everything comes out of nothing. I made a little scientific experiment one time in Kuala Lumpur when I was traveling through there and preaching. I took an empty pot, I turned on the stove, I put the pot on the stove, and I shook it, you know, pop, 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 and no popcorn came out. And so by that scientific experiment, I can understand you can't get something out of nothing. So Dr. Stephen Hawking is actually not a scientist. He is a dogmatist. Simply a dogmatist. Because he's not basing his statement on any scientific experiment, anything that's logical. It's simply an illogical, unverifiable speculation. That's all it is. Nothing has been ever derived from nothing. There's no case in the history that something was derived from nothing. It's never happened before. And if it's true, then duplicate it, Dr. Hawking. Duplicate it. Take nothing and get something out of it. Just give me one blade of grass out of nothing. Just do it. As my temple president in Gainesville, Amaranda, used to say, put up or shut up. You know, give us the evidence or just shut your mouth. You see? Actually, a big scientist came to Gainesville, Dr. Wald. And he was saying that matter precedes consciousness. So our temple president went there and challenged him in a huge auditorium. He stood up and challenged him. The two of them were having a... And later on, that he became transformed. He became a friend of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I mean, he liked the Hare Krishna movement. He was So it was actually very beneficial that he got challenged like that. I had an experience also in Gainesville. I went to one gathering of all the science departments came when, I forget the gentleman's name, some PhD from some observatory in California, I forget the name, but he came there to tell us there are black holes in outer space. Now, whether there are or not is not really the point. There could be. I'm not saying there's not. But I was just dealing with what is his system of knowing? I wanted to inquire, how is it that you know things? I wanted to come to study that issue, and I had a couple of questions with him. He said, he's saying that there are black holes in outer space. So I raised my hand, they recognized me, and there were like 3,000 people there. And I said, is this a theory or a fact? He said, I think, note the word, I think it's a fact. Okay, fine. And then a few more questions came in. Again, I raised my hand. I said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some time until it's finally replaced by another theory. So how do we know that your theory, now this is called a loaded question, you see. You just said it's not a theory, it's a fact, but this is called a loaded question. How do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? And then he said, well, I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. He just admitted it was, he just contradicted himself, actually. It's a fact. Oh, actually, it's a theory that's going to be defeated when science advances a little further. So they call this science. Whatever you can, you know, whoever is the best razzle-dazzler, who could best razzle-dazzle everybody's mind with his theory, they think, oh yes, he's the leading scientist of the day. The best razzle-dazzler is the leading scientist of the day, you see. Until a better razzle-dazzler comes along and razzle-dazzles everybody better than he did. And then he's the leading scientist. Until another one comes along and they call this science. The Bhagavatam calls this nescience. So we were talking about peace last night, you see. This sort of approach to knowledge doesn't bring peace in the world. We've seen that such advancements in the modern technology, and parallel to that, we've seen the complete disintegration and degradation of the higher values in life of the people. This materialistic science has given us, you know, so many gadgets, and we can use them. I'm not against them. I mean, I'm flying on jet airplanes, I'm using an iPhone, MacBook Pro computer for broadcasting this. So we have people all over the world on this class today. We have people from Australia, people from Lithuania, we have people from, see where else are coming in from today, some Malaysia. So we're using this. There's no harm to use this advancement. We're not against it. But don't think because you can invent the internet that you can disprove the existence of God, you see. Just because you can give us the internet and iPhones and 747s doesn't mean you can tell us there's no God, you see. Don't get carried away, sir, with all your technological advancement and thinking that now you know the whole, how the universe works. That they do not know. They do not understand how this universe works. They do not understand. So, we can combine these things, you see. We can take the advancement of Western civilization. There's no harm with it. We're not saying it's bad. But don't use it to challenge the existence of God. That's all we're saying. Nothing wrong with the Western advancement. Prabhupada compares that to the lame man and the blind man. One man, he is blind, but he has stout and strong legs, you see. And the other man, he's a crippled man. He cannot walk, but he has very good vision, you see. So the two of them, they make a very good team. The man who has good vision, but he cannot walk, he rides on the shoulder of the blind man who has very good legs. So in this way, by combining the Vedic wisdom of the East with the technological advancement of the West, we can have a new global civilization unparalleled in this Kali Yuga, a new standard of global civilization can come out, a glorious, wonderful global civilization can come. You take this technological advancement and combine it with the spiritual advancement of the Vedic culture. You have a very wonderful civilization. So we don't negate these things. Simply, everything should be used in the service of Krishna. Yat kadoshi, yad ashnasi, yad jahosi dadasi, yat tapashashi kontaya, tat kadushva madarpanam. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. One may say, what is this? The empirical scientist, what is this nonsense? Some person named Krishna, you're supposed to offer everything to him? That doesn't make any sense. You see? That's what they're thinking. This is some religious poppycock, you know. What is this? Some stupid sentimentalism. But let's lay aside all of our preconceived ideas and just look at it intelligently and logically. Just consider your body as an example. There is a energy center of the body, which is in terms of physical energy we're speaking now. And that's the belly. By feeding the belly, all the bodily parts get nourished. Similarly, in a tree, by watering the root, you water the whole tree. So there's a universal root as well, the same principle. It runs along parallel lines. As you have the root of the tree, as the belly of the body, you also have a center of the universe. And if our energy can go there, you see, then everything becomes energized. Now, it's crazy the way we're living. Don't put tulsi leaves in the water. I get stuck in my throat, and it always happens every time. And it's hard for me to talk. So, there's an example given in the Vedic scriptures that Prabhupada describes how the bodily parts were thinking, what is this nonsense, serving the belly? We're working so hard to feed the belly, this is nonsense. They actually form a labor union. They said, you know, on strike, don't feed the belly, don't feed the belly. They went on strike. So the first day the strike was going on with great enthusiasm. Don't feed the belly, don't feed the belly. Belly's a fascist pig, don't feed the belly. You see. The second day, energy was going down a bit. But the third day, they were just laying around, they couldn't do anything, they had no energy to even get up. And they kind of mumbled, well, I think we better call another meeting of the labor union. And they realize, well, you have to feed the belly, you see. So what we're doing in our modern day civilization, we're neglecting to feed the belly. We're neglecting to give our loving service to the Supreme Person, who's the source of everything, the energy center of everything. And therefore, we're dying, we're drying up. We're actually, literally, we're moving towards a global drought. We're heading in that direction, global drought. They're thinking of how to get water out of the ocean. And some countries are already doing it. At great expense, they have to extract their water from the ocean. Very expensive process. It's unnatural. We're meant to have natural water naturally from the rains, sufficiently for every person on this planet. But we're moving towards step by step every day. There's more land every day turning into desert. Gradually, the whole planet will become a vast desert. That's where we're headed. And so many other things. It's predicted in the happen at the end of the Kali Yuga. All because we're neglecting to give our loving service to that center of the universe, Krishna or God. We have to come back to the God-centered conception. Nowadays, they either one of two things. They want to deny God. Well, actually, there's three things. They want to deny God. They want to say that they are God, in Mayavadi philosophy. Or they want to use God for their own sense gratification. The order supplier. These are all three deviations from the proper conception of God. We are not that we are meant to take God to serve us, to help facilitate our sense gratification. Not that we are God or not that God is dead. We are meant to be simply engaged in the loving service of that Supreme Person who's so beautiful, who's so wonderful, who's so powerful, so knowledgeable, so renowned, so famous, so wealthy. And that Supreme Person is the best friend, Sushridam Sarvabhutanam, the absolutely best friend of everyone. You don't have a better friend than Krishna. He's absolutely your best friend. He's simply waiting, when are you come back out of this foolish position of trying to imitate him in the material world, where you're only kidding yourself, causing yourself unnecessary distress and turmoil. He's simply waiting, when they will come back to me. Krishna is not punishing us, we're punishing ourselves. We came here because we wanted to come here. Not that Krishna, well, I don't like your attitude, so I condemn you to the material world. No. We came here, Krishna facilitated our desire to be in a place where we can think that we're the center. It was his facility to us. He facilitated us, you see. We wanted a place where we can think, yes, I am the Supreme. Everything revolves around me. So Krishna says, well, if you really want it, I'll let you have it. But when you realize what a foolish mistake it was, you can come back. You're welcome to come back. So Krishna is not a punishing God. He is simply a loving God. He wants to facilitate. He's an affectionate father who wants to facilitate his children to make them happy. So in this way, you see, we misused that free will that we have. Misused it to try to imitate Krishna. So now we should hear from great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishna himself. We should hear from these great, great personalities. And we should very clearly understand what a foolish, stupid, idiotic mistake I made to try to enjoy separately from the Lord in this material existence. Stupid. The most moronic mistake you could ever make. I've made it. I have to admit my mistake and I have to try to rectify myself. By hearing from saintly teachers, by hearing from the devotees, by hearing from the scriptures, what is the method by which I can be re-established in my original constitutional position? Sarup Siddhi. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. We have to get back to our original identity. So this Krishna consciousness movement, it's not really a religious movement. It's this educational movement. We're not, in other words, we're not presenting another sect of religion. We have, you know, there's the church here, the temple, the mosque. It's just another one of the religious organizations in the world. another one of the religions. No. We are teaching the science of God, which is equally applicable to Christians, Jews, Hindus, Sikhs, Jains, Buddhists, whoever. This is an educational institution. We're teaching you how to become perfect in the science of the Absolute Truth. How to dovetail your every thought, word, and deed with the Supreme Person who is the Absolute Truth. Whatever your religion is, you can keep it. If you're a Christian, you can remain a Christian. If you're a Hindu, you can remain a Hindu. If you're a Buddhist, whatever you are, you see. Remain, but then learn how to become perfect in that religion. That is the science of religion, the universal science of religion, and that is what Krishna is teaching in the Gita. Don't remain caught up in all these different false designations, upadis. Understand that you're simply an eternal spiritual being, qualitatively one with the Lord, therefore meant to fully dovetail yourself with the Lord. Every thought, word, and deed is meant to be completely dovetailed with Him, fully absorbed in His loving service. And this understanding we should get by carefully hearing the message of Krishna, and then we should very carefully and sincerely try to put it into practice as best as we can. Because by doing that, there is an awakening of that dormant Krishna consciousness within the heart. Just like a match has fire within it. The fire is already there in the match. All you have to do is strike it and the fire comes out. So you have pure love of God within your heart. Actually, you're already a fully liberated, enlightened soul. Simply you're covered with this conditioned mentality right now. Therefore, by engaging yourself in the activities of a liberated soul, chanting, dancing, feasting, remembering the Lord, then you will come back. Just like a person suffering from amnesia. There was one time a gentleman in Dallas, Texas, we read in the newspaper. He went out for a walk in the neighborhood, as people sometimes do. And some funny thing happened in his chemistry of his brain, and he went into an amnesiac state. He totally forgot who he was, where he lived, what his name was, where his house was. He forgot everything about himself. So he lived on the streets for some time, wandering about, not knowing who he was. Until one day a friend spotted him and said, "Oh, John, come home. Get in the car, we'll take you home." And then he went through some, psychotherapy, psychiatrist or a psychologist. And by associating with him, bringing him into the association of those things connected with his actual identity, his wife, his dog, his fishing rod or whatever, what he was into. Put him back in touch with all those things that were his identity before he went into amnesia, and gradually it came back. So the Krishna consciousness is the same thing. You are actually the eternal servant of Krishna. You're not of this material world. You're wandering in the streets of Dallas, wandering in this material world, not knowing who you are, trying to be something. Someone told you, "Well, I think you're such and such." You try to be that. "I think you're a boy, so you should be a boy. I think you're a girl, you should be a girl. I think you're American or Danish or Czech, Slovakian or Indian, or I think you're this or that, so you should be that." All these false, they're called upadis, false designations. So we're trying to be this and that and this and that. It's not us. It's not us. We're foolishly spinning our wheels trying to be something that we're not, and we're not going anywhere. We're not making any progress towards the ultimate goal of life by simply trying to, live in the realm of false identity. Therefore, we must come out of the realm of false identity. We have to come back to our actual natures. And by doing that, then all the memories will come back. other memories will come back. That day will come when you actually remember at the asakti stage, when you will actually remember who you are in the pastimes of Krishna, what is your actual identity. That remembrance comes at the asakti stage. It's a very high level, the beginning of pure bhakti. That remembrance will come. Now we're at a very low level, just trying, you know, trying to get absorbed in the process. Some of us are initiated and now we're battling it out on the level called anartana vritti, trying to conquer the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, illusion, envy. Those who are not yet initiated, but are coming, they're on the stage of sadhu sangha, associating with devotees. Their step is to go to bhajana kriya to get initiated. And then once you're initiated, you're empowered, you get full empowerment from your spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. You get full empowerment now to conquer over all the anartas, you see. So that initiation is required. It gives you empowerment to conquer the lust, greed, anger, madness, illusion, envy within the heart. You can't go, in other words, there's association of devotees, or getting the anartas, but initiation is a step in between. To get empowered, to get free from those anartas, you have to be initiated. You get special power. Initiation gives you special empowerment to conquer the anartas. Provided you obey your spiritual master. You have to obey him. You have to please him by your attitude, by your words, and by your activities. And by doing that, then you actually become empowered to conquer over the lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. And once you do that, then you achieve the state called nishta, fixed up devotee. Prabhupada explains after nishta, there's no more struggle, or practically no more struggle. It's a struggle in the beginning, you see. It's a struggle. I struggle to have faith because there's so many doubts. I struggle to associate with devotees because sometimes there's some clash between devotees. I struggle at that level. I struggle with initiation to keep my vows. I struggle to, you know, not be lusty, not be greedy, not be angry. I struggle with these things. But when you get to nishta, all that struggling is gone. It's like you're going from point A to point B, and there's a big mountain range between this city and that city. There's a huge mountain range. So going sadhu sangha, ashada, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartana vritti, you finally get up here to nishta, and now it's just now downhill. Once you get a nishta, the struggle is finished. It's just celebration. Ki jai. It's very easy. So work very hard to get to achieve that state, to get to the nishta stage. Have faith, associate with devotees, get initiated, work very diligently to obey your spiritual master's orders, because that will free you from all the anartas. And then by that, you'll finally reach that point where it's just like, wow, now I can just glide on in. Just like in American baseball. Somebody hits a home run out of the ballpark, but they still have to run around the bases, but there's no struggle. It's just like a celebration run, you know. The ball went out of the park, but they run around the bases and everybody's cheering, you know. They run around. So after anartana vritti, it's kind of like that. You've hit the ball out of the park, now you're just running around the bases. Not a struggle, it's like a celebration. Now we're struggling. You see, we're struggling with material desires, we're struggling with laziness, with craziness, with offensiveness. We're struggling with these things. So we just got to keep struggling. And what's the mood? Embrace the struggle. Take it enthusiastically. Embrace the struggle. This is my yajna that I'm doing. That's going to free me from all anxieties for all of eternity. It's going to free me from having a body that gets sick, that old, gets old and dies. It's going to free me. I'm having to struggle to earn, make a living. It's going to feed me from all these struggles. I just have to conquer over these dirty things in the heart and be fully absorbed in Krishna. You see? So in this way, we have to understand the science. And now we can have, there's some questions from you all also up on the internet. They can ask questions. So now we're open for questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Let me mention about this man who got amnesia.
Yeah.
Because of some chemical imbalance or whatever.
Media what?
Because of some chemical imbalance.
Chemical imbalance?
Yeah, because of that. You said that.
A chemical imbalance?
In his brain. Yeah. You said chemical imbalance in his brain.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't it prove that memory comes from chemistry?
Does memory come from chemistry? Does this prove that memory comes from chemistry?
And consciousness.
Well, the brain is not actually the mind. They think it's the mind, but it's not really the mind. The brain is simply a tool used by the mind. Just like, do the eyes see, or do you see through your eyes? Does the brain think, or do you think through your brain? Is it like that? Does your tongue taste, or do you taste through your tongue? You see? So actually, the brain is simply a tool being utilized by the person, just like the tongue or the eyes, like that. Any other questions? Yes.
The five most important angas of devotional service: chanting, reading, and associating with devotees, going to holy places, and worshipping the deity. How come preaching is not directly mentioned? How come giving Krishna consciousness to others is not one of the angas?
Oh, there's different lists. It certainly is the Lord Chaitanya's direct order. So how it cannot be an anga, one of the limbs of pure bhakti. Jari deka tadi. Actually, Prabhupada emphasizes it so much. He says that Krishna's order, sarvadharman parityaja mamekam shuddhanandvaja, surrender to me, is expressed by Lord Chaitanya in the form of this order, jari deka tadi kaha Krishna upadesh. So it's even more than an anga. It's the central, the very essence of surrender to Krishna in this age is to preach. It's even bigger than an anga. It's the very essence of Krishna consciousness itself. The essence is to surrender to Krishna, but Lord Chaitanya presents the same essence, jari deka tadi kaha Krishna upadesh. So if you're surrendered to Krishna in this Kali Yuga means to take up the position of guru or teacher. That's what it means. Surrender means you be a teacher, you be a guru to teach this science now. This is what you have to do. That is surrender. So it's bigger than anga. Okay, here we have a question coming in from Australia. What is the minimum standard to wear Tulsi neck beads? Any shastic reference? One person wants to know it. Like how many strands? I know I was trained by Vishnujana Swami. Prabhupada told me, you have been trained up under the expert guides of the Vishnujana Swami. We were taught to put on 3 strands of neck beads. So I've read somewhere, Prabhupada said either 2 or 3 strands. Generally what we advise people who are not initiated is wear 1 strand, and then initiation you go to 3. That's basically the standard that we In terms of my students, that's how I've seen in ISKCON, and that's how I've gotten from my teachers. And so that's how I engage my students. In the beginning, we're one strand, and when you're initiated, we'll give you three to signify your initiation. In Vedic culture, these symbols are used. Just like a chaste woman parts her hair in the middle, and a prostitute parts her hair on the side. That way you can see who you're dealing with, how to deal with her in the proper way. So in a similar way, we also show who's initiated and who's not. So we know if he's not initiated, we should encourage him to get initiated. If he is initiated, we should bow down at his feet. Is it? So in this way, we do that. There are these designations of external. Yeah.
When should one start to wear the Kantimala? When?
I've never seen it stated anywhere in Prabhupada's books. Some devotees say, well, when they're following the principles and chanting japa, starting their japa, would be a good thing. They're not engaged in any sinful activities. It should signify something. Not that they're wearing neck beads and going over to McDonald's and having a Big Mac. You see. I would advise that they should be following the principles and chanting, starting off on japa. There's no hard and fast rule, but it's how you want to train them. Yeah, I don't think the GBC is going to make it. I don't think they want to make a resolution about it. It's up to the individual devotees. I mean, the gift stores are probably, someone in the gift store mentality is whoever gives the money gets the beads. That's the mentality of the gift shops, usually. Whatever, the money is the honey. But my mood would be to say, okay, you want to wear them, that's great, but... Because there is a statement, by wearing neck beads, you're protected from the Yamadutas, but it's not something that you can engage in sinful activities and wearing neck beads, and now you don't have to worry about the Yamadutas. It's not like that. Wearing neck beads means you're following religious principles. It's a symbol that you're following religious principles. So I would recommend that they should be following regular principles and chanting some japa, not necessarily 16, but some japa they should be chanting. They're getting started in their japa. They're following the principle. Yeah.
I have asked this question to several devotees, but I would like to hear your answer. How far can Agyata Sukriti take a person?
How far can Agyata Sukriti
take a person?
Save?
Take a person. On the spiritual path.
Take?
Yeah, how far can it take you?
You can bring on the spiritual path.
Well, it could take you all the way in extraordinary cases. There is Kripa Siddhi. By special mercy, sometimes someone becomes delivered. Krishna's mercy is inconceivable. So even Agyata Sukriti, one could become liberated just by Agyata Sukriti. It's possible, but don't count on it. I mean, you could get an honorary degree also. Like some university may discover some of your rap lyrics and think, wow, you can give an honorary degree, PhD. What are the chances of that happening? Is it? Sometimes people get honorary degrees. It's about, but if you want a degree, you enroll in the university you work for. Let's see, anything else? Any questions? Local? Yeah?
Often we have the idea that even government should be guided by devotees and of the Eastern movement. And then maybe some cynical voice would say, why don't we also guide ourselves? Because not always our management is really up to them.
So what's the question?
That's the question.
Why
don't we guide ourselves before we want to guide the whole world?
So someone would say, why should you even think of guiding the whole world? Why don't you just guide yourself? So why should we think of guiding the world? Well, maybe we should just forget about it and not even distribute the books, huh? Think I'm so fallen I can't preach to anybody, so I'm just going to... I wouldn't dare preach to anybody. I'm certainly not qualified to preach, so we'll just call off the preaching and we'll just focus on developing our own Krishna consciousness. Would that be a very good idea? I'm not qualified to guide anyone. I certainly couldn't guide anyone how to be Krishna conscious, because I'm not a pure devotee yet. I'm not seeing Krishna face to face. How can I tell anybody to chant Hare Krishna? Because I'm not seeing Krishna face to face. How could I possibly tell a government official they should close down the slaughterhouse? Because I haven't seen Krishna yet. The thing is this. If one is following these principles, he's chanting 16 rounds, he's following the four regulative principles, he's initiated devotee, he's sincerely trying to obey his spiritual master to the best of his abilities. He may not be a Paramahamsa, he may just be a struggling neophyte, but the fact is, he's an empowered representative of Krishna. And he can, it's his duty to, and his life, to do as much as he can to deliver everybody. Prabhupada told us, become guru and deliver the whole world. He ordered us to deliver the whole world. So if I think of delivering the whole world, you know, as a cooperative member of this movement who has a world deliverance mission, am I in Maya? Because I'm thinking about how we can deliver the world. Is that Maya? Well, how can I think that we must deliver the world when I'm still struggling with my own anarthas? Is it? The fact is that by engaging in the Sankirtan Yajna, which means to deliver the world, that will help me to become free from my anarthas. And Prabhupada explains that that by... how did he say that? One's own conviction becomes strengthened by preaching this philosophy. You see, I may have some anarthas floating around my. Of course, I had tons of anarthas, but not. I have tons of anarthas floating around my consciousness, right? So, but by following the order of my spiritual master, and giving Krishna to everyone I possibly can, every person. I don't care if it's a prime minister or a dishwasher, it doesn't matter. Our mission is to give Krishna to everyone we meet. If I meet the prime minister, I don't dare preach to him. If you met the prime minister, you'd think, well, I certainly wouldn't want to preach to them because I'm not a pure devotee. What do you think? Well, the prime minister said, what is your philosophy? Maybe it will help me do my job better as the prime minister. Oh, I can't tell you anything because I'm not seeing Krishna face to face. Would you do that? If you're prime minister, what's your government leader? You have a queen or a king or something?
Oh, we have a prime minister.
If your prime minister called you up and said, I'm having trouble managing this country. I understand you Hare Krishna people have some very deep wisdom. Can you come and talk to me and help me? Would you say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not qualified? It actually happened in one European country, Eastern Europe. I heard that. They asked the devotees and they said, we're not qualified. Now, was that proper? The government actually asked for help and they said, the devotees said, we're not qualified to give you any advice. Can you imagine? Would that be a proper thing? Oh, we're not qualified. You know, we're just humble devotees. We're not qualified to guide you how to run the government. You think Prabhupada would be pleased with them? You had an opportunity to preach to the prime minister, and you said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not qualified. Well, maybe you're not qualified, but maybe there's some other devotee. If you feel not qualified, that's all right. But maybe there's some other devotee you can say, you know, contact your GBC. Maybe he's qualified. You see what I'm saying? If you feel personally unqualified, then you should call and get another devotee who's more qualified than you. If he had an certainly if he had an opportunity to preach to the prime minister, you would want to get some high level, you know, highly realized devotees to preach to him. That'd be an intelligent thing to do. But to think that we, the members of the Krishna conscious movement, are being presumptuous and naive to think that we could possibly give any advice to the governments of this world how to improve the world situation. I mean, that's not true. We have the formula for world peace. It's right there. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshvaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shancham richati. We have the formula for world peace. Do you doubt that formula? Of course you don't. Of course you don't. So, do you doubt your ability to be able to tell someone the meaning of that verse? I may not be seeing Krishna face to face, you see, but I know I have a proper understanding of that verse, Bhoktanam Jagatam. And I know I can explain that to someone, to a government leader, and tell them, if you want to solve the problems of your country, all you have to do is educate your people to understand that there is a supreme person who owns everything, and who everything is meant for his enjoyment, and he's the best friend of everyone. He's known by different names. Some people call him Allah, some people call him Jehovah, some people call him Krishna, but there is a supreme person who is meant to, who owns everything, is meant to enjoy everything, and he's the best friend. We can tell, I'm confident, I could tell, and I could go to Queen Elizabeth, I can go to anybody and explain, this is the formula how you can bring perfect peace and happiness to all of your citizens. You simply have to educate everybody in this scientific understanding. Now, I'm not a pure devotee. I'm have my anartas, you see. But I know that I can purely present this knowledge that will solve all the problems of the world. So therefore, it's my duty. If a DHL man came to your house with a certified check for $1 million, okay? He said, "I've come to give you this certified check for $1 million." You say, "Well, wait a minute, are you a millionaire?" "Oh no, I'm not. I'm just struggling to pay my bills, but I don't want it." You're not a millionaire. I don't want your check for certified check for $1 million. You see. Let's look the other way. You're the DHL man. Can you deliver a check for $1 billion to somebody whose name is on the label, on the address label? No, your duty is simply to deliver the $1 billion check. You're not a billionaire, but you can deliver it. Prabhupada said, "I'm not a pure devotee, but my purity is I'm acting on behalf of the pure devotee." Prabhupada said. So Prabhupada said that, but it's our position, you understand? We are not pure devotees. We're struggling neophytes, but we are acting as messengers of the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and this whole disciplic succession of realized souls who can see Krishna at every minute. And if we simply act as honest messengers, we don't open up the envelope and doctor with a check, deliver the check as it is, then we have the position and the authority and the potency to actually give that knowledge or deliver the whole world. Just be an honest DHL employee. That's all we ask you to be, Prabhu. Just be an honest, you know, Krishna HL or whatever. Whatever DHL stands for. Be an honest Krishna delivery boy. People say, "Oh, I was really inspired by your lecture." I say, "It was just Prabhupada's mercy. Yeah, I'm just a croaking toad sitting up here. You say, "I'm just a croaking toad." But if anything wonderful or inspiring or good comes out of my croaking, this hour's worth of croaking up here, it's just Prabhupada's mercy. I don't take any credit for it at all. It's all his mercy. You see. So in this way, if one thinks, I'm nothing, I'm just a croaking toad, but I'm representing the most the most, the greatest spiritual master in the history, at least of the Kali Yuga, if not beyond that, the greatest spiritual master in the Kali Yuga, for the most empowered acharya for inundating the whole world with bhakti, you see. Of all the acharyas, he is the one acharya. Prabhupada is the one acharya who was empowered to make the whole world Krishna conscious. Other acharyas didn't do that. They were preaching in a limited sphere. Prabhupada is an acharya who was empowered to make the whole world Krishna conscious. He even told my godbrother, Bhavabhuti, like that, that he was asked why Lord Chaitanya didn't live with the whole world. Prabhupada said he has left that for me to do. You see, Lord Chaitanya preached only within India. Even Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, who can deliver all the whole multi-universes, he only preached within India, but he gave the world A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada talks about this in his purport. Slightly different way, he says how the, just as the father is very pleased to see the son can accomplish more than him, in the same way the Supreme Lord likes to see his devotee as the hero of some episode of which Krishna himself is actually the doer, but he doesn't take the credit, he gives the credit to his devotee. He wants to see that his devotee is more glorified than he. That's Krishna's position, his kindness. So we have to act on behalf of Srila Prabhupada to give this message to everyone we possibly can. I'm hoping the government leaders will go on my e-course. I'm always hoping, you know, because I know this knowledge that I'm giving, it's not my knowledge. This knowledge is coming from Srila Prabhupada, and this knowledge will deliver the whole world. Okay, let's see here now. If they have independence, why are they not considered as marginal energy? Wait a minute, we've got to go to the previous question. The gopis and the expansions who are part of Krishna's internal energy, do they have independence? Of course. Krishna doesn't, they're not dancing robots. Of course the gopis have independence. Are only marginal souls have independence? No. Every single living being has independence because we're all part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is independent, therefore we being qualitatively one with the Lord, we all have independence. So are they considered marginal energy? That's an interesting question. I don't recall the answer to that. The liberated souls, are they marginal energy? Certainly they have independence. That's the real point. Now, the important thing is to know that everybody has independence. Nobody's a robot. Everybody has independence. Some misuse it, some never misuse it. They are called nitya siddhas. They never misuse their independence. Any other questions? Okay, we'll stop here. And we thank you all very, very much for coming today here and from all over the world on the internet. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Goda Premanandi.
His Grace Sangha Shanda Sarikari Prabhu ki
jai. Hare Krishna.